Bilawal Bhutto has taken over as the Foreign Minister of Pakistan at the age of 32. So what's new, you might ask me. Subcontinent has dynastic traditions, and in Pakistan, even more strongly than India, because we have spoken in the past about Pakistan's two running dynasties now, the Sharif dynasty, which Nawaz Sharif has founded in his own lifetime, mostly through his brothers and now his daughter, and his brother's son, who's the Chief Minister of Pakistan in Punjab, but also the Bhutto dynasty. So Bilawal Bhutto becoming foreign minister, first of all, reaching high, getting high positions early in life, is something that runs in that dynasty. The grandfather, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, became a cabinet minister, in fact, commerce minister to begin with, at the age of 29. And he became foreign minister, I think, at the age of 31 or 32 or thereabouts. So Bilawal, if anything, has become foreign minister even younger than that. Zulfikar Ali Bhutto became minister that young, and he was very well educated. He had been to Oxford and Berkeley, shining academic career, very good speaker. And you know, when he was judicially assassinated by Ziaul-Haq, how old was he? He was just about 51 years old. So by the age of 51, he had been foreign minister of Pakistan through a very newsy and very eventful decade of the 60s. Pakistan fought the war with India in 65. There were long periods of talks over Kashmir between India and Pakistan, where Sardar Swaran Singh, who was India's representative at the talks, basically tired Bhutto out to the extent that Bhutto got exasperated. And Bhutto said, listen, if the logic of partition was Hindu-Muslim, then why don't you leave Kashmir alone? And Sardar Swaran Singh, this is a story from oral history. Obviously, nobody has recorded it. Nobody can record an accent or how something is spoken, but it's a likely story because Bhutto got even more exasperated when Sardar Swaran Singh told him that, look, this Hindu-Muslim logic does not apply in the case of Kashmir for us because India is a secular country. Now, you know, in Punjab, sometimes, or any part of India, we take liberties with how we pronounce certain words in English language. And that is when Bhutto, who was such an Anglophile, he was completely exasperated. So, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, foreign minister in his 30s, early 30s, prime minister barely into his 40s, in fact, president first, then prime minister. And 51, when he was assassinated after having spent some time in Ziaul-Haq's jail, he had been commerce minister, foreign minister, president, all-powerful prime minister with a big, huge majority. He gave Pakistan his famous 1973 constitution, which many dictators after that have tried to set aside and make amendments or bring their own constitutions. But essentially, even today, Pakistan's contribution has that at its heart. So all that he achieved by age 51. Now, why is it that we call Bhutto dynasty the most fascinating dynasty in the subcontinent? You might say that the Nehru Gandhis have not done quite badly. They've had one member of the dynasty who was Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, but also seen to be the founder of modern India. His daughter also Prime Minister, his grandson again Prime Minister, that is Rajiv Gandhi. And then his granddaughter-in-law, that is Sonia Gandhi, heading UPA, which again led India for 10 years. So how come you are not calling them such a fascinating dynasty? All right. Violence. Both dynasties have suffered from violence. In the Gandhi dynasty, Indira Gandhi, Rajiv Gandhi were both assassinated. Indira Gandhi as serving prime minister, Rajiv Gandhi as former prime minister, and in between Sanjay Gandhi, who was Mrs. Gandhi's younger but favorite political son, favorite in politics, he also died a violent death, albeit in a plane crash. So both families have had their tragedies, but look at what's happened with the Bhuttos and how quickly in life has a lot of it happened to them, good as well as bad. So Bhutto, as we told you, whatever happened, he'd achieved everything there was to achieve and got assassinated at 51. And so at 51, because of the way Zia killed him, he also got immortalized in Pakistan's and subcontinent's history. Then his daughter, his first one was Benazir Bhutto. So Benazir Bhutto became prime minister the first time in her late mid-30s, became prime minister again a few years later, again lost her job. So she became prime minister twice. And when she was assassinated, she was not more than about 54 years old. So once again, prime minister twice, spent many years in jail, made her fame, was respected globally, and continued her party and strengthened her party in her time, went into exile more than once, came back, took the risks, and it's because she took those risks that finally she got assassinated. In fact, before the assassins did succeed, they had made one more attempt on her with a kind of a suicide bombing that did not work out, and yet it did not stop her from campaigning. So she died in the second one. Now, what happens to the dynasty after that? She dies, her children are very small. So who takes over the party? That's her husband, Asif Ali Zardari. He takes over the party and he serves as president of Pakistan for 5 years between 2008 and 2013. And now, while he continues to run the party, that is the old Bhutto party, in 1967, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto had set up Pakistan People's Party, and then it was a very leftist party. In fact, if you listen to Bhutto's speeches, Bhutto was probably the fieriest and in some ways the most abusive big-time speaker. I can find you lots of chota-chota speakers who are very abusive, but Bhutto was a big leader, and yet he could use expletives in his speeches as few others can. But usually those were directed at American agents, Americans, sarmayadar, capitalists, stuff like that. Never mind the fact that Bhutto family was the biggest landowner in Sindh. At one point, size of the land owned by them was reckoned to be 250,000 acres. So you imagine how much is 250,000 acres. Obviously, there was no land reform or no land ceilings there. So he became this big socialist leader and set up this big left-wing socialist party. Now, over time, PPP did not remain such a strong nationwide party because, as we explained in an earlier Cut the Clutter, Pakistan's regional diversity came into play. And as Punjab produced another strong leader, that is in Nawaz Sharif and the Sharif family, in Punjab, it became impossible for Pakistan People's Party to get many seats. But they continued to rule Sindh. So they were always a factor. Now, because there is a coalition government, they bring in a certain number of MNAs, that is Pakistan's equivalent of our MPs, in the coalition. That's how Bilawal Zardari becomes foreign minister at such a young age. Now, Bhutto dynasty also has other elements. It's not as linear as it might seem to us today. And you can see that there is tragedy also spread all across. So Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, Benazir wasn't his only child. He had four children. So there was Benazir the first, Sanam Bhutto, daughter, then two sons, Murtaza and Shahnawaz. At this point, only Sanam Bhutto survives. She lives overseas. And in fact, lately she has featured on some interviews. In fact, I'll share with you a link of an interview she had done with my friend Raza Ahmed Rumi on his Naya Daur channel. The other three died violent deaths and mysterious unresolved deaths. So Benazir Bhutto, we know she was killed by a suicide bomber. And until today, nobody has got to the bottom of how she died, who killed her. It's almost as if nobody's interested. So a lot of noise is made. And for 5 years, her party was in power, her husband was the president, her party men was the prime minister, her party men were the prime ministers, but nobody got to the bottom of it. It's as if nobody wanted to find out. What happened to her two brothers, that is Murtaza and Shahnawaz? That's more interesting. In fact, Shahnawaz died at just short of 27. Now, Shahnawaz and Murtaza, after Bhutto was arrested by Ziaul Haq and his government was thrown out, both of them went into exile into Afghanistan. At that point, Afghan regime was left-wing, sort of left-wing, nationalist, but very hostile to Pakistan. And you can then connect the dots because 1979 is around time when all this tamasha takes place in Afghanistan and the Soviets come in and the invasion takes place and the jihad begins. So the Afghan regime at that point is very hostile to Pakistan and vice versa. The two countries are having more than a cold war amongst themselves. So the two sons of Bhutto escaped to Afghanistan, to Kabul, where Afghan intelligence helps them, and they then try to set up an organization to bring about some kind of a revolutionary change in Pakistan, to get Ziaul-Haq out and to get the 1973 constitution restored. They also in the course of time married two sisters, two Afghan sisters, Rehana and Fauzia. Now it so happens that not long after that, Shahnawaz it is who dies. He suddenly pops up dead in Nice in France, the resort town in France. And at that point, it was said that he died of poisoning. The Pakistani official explanation was that no. And that is also something that Zia's government spread, that he had died of drug addiction, drug overdose and alcohol. But it was widely believed that he was poisoned to death. And then once again, as happens in these cases, it was also widely believed that somehow the Pakistani intelligence or the Pakistani bad guys were involved in his assassination. He had not just died, he had been assassinated. And his wife, it was Rehana, who was suspected also of having poisoned him. So she was also kept in custody by the French authorities for some time. Finally, she was acquitted and she went off to America. Now, when that happened, apparently it seems that Murtaza used that as a reason or maybe an excuse to divorce his wife as well, the other sister as well. And with his daughter, who's Fatima Bhutto, the well-known author, writer, opinion leader, public intellectual, respected across the world, he went away from Kabul to Syria, to Damascus. And that is where he got caught in this sort of left-wing revolutionary whirl in the Middle East. And that's where he also met this Lebanese dancer, Ghinwa, who he got married to next. Now, the organization that the two brothers had set up, it was called Al-Zulfikar, because the father's name was Zulfikar Ali Bhutto. And they used to carry out little operations here and there, a few violent acts also, helped along by the Afghans. So they also carried out many acts which would be called by any government of the day as terrorist acts. So among the people that Al-Zulfikar apparently or allegedly assassinated was a man called Chaudhry Zahoor Ilahi. Chaudhry Zahoor Ilahi was a well-known conservative old politician from Lahore, also a very rich man. And in India, we believe that he was among the first founders of the Khalistan campaign, of the Sikh separatist campaign, or the support base in Pakistan. And some of the overseas leaders who first started talking about Khalistan or a Sikh separate state were his friends, Chaudhry Zahoor Ilahi. Obviously, I could not have met him because he was assassinated in 1979. But I knew his son well. His son now is the leader of PMLQ, which is a party which is like the King's party. He is Chaudhry Shujaat Hussain, who's also been Prime Minister briefly and who has held many other cabinet positions in Pakistan. So once again, dynasties are linked with dynasties. So Chaudhry Zahoor Ilahi was assassinated in 1979. The Bhutto, young Bhuttos were blamed for it. In 1980, Murtaza got married. In 1981, a PIA aircraft was hijacked from Karachi by Al-Zulfikar group. That aircraft was first taken to Kabul. At Kabul, lots of negotiations took place, after which the aircraft was taken to Damascus. That hijack drama continued for 13 days. In the process, one hostage was killed, and I'll tell you a little story about him. These are all typically fascinating subcontinental stories. And the important thing is these have all played out in our lifetimes. In fact, most of these in my working lifetime. So 1981, this aircraft is taken to Syria, and I told you one hostage was killed. That hostage who was killed, the only one to be killed, was a Pakistani army officer. His name was Major Tariq Rahim. Major Tariq Rahim, just his luck, used to be ADC to Zulfikar Ali Bhutto. And the stories go, I mean, lots of stuff written about what exactly happened. There is also a book by Fatima Bhutto, you can see the jacket, where she says her father had nothing to do with either the assassination or the hijack, that it was done by somebody else who just called her father, and that's how her father was trapped in the conspiracy. But there are other books also which say that no, he was the mastermind. Now Major Tariq Rahim, he apparently kept sending slips out from the aircraft while negotiations were going on under the belly of the parked aircraft in Kabul, saying that look, I was your father's ADC, please spare my life, please spare my life. And it so happens from all written accounts, and I have no reason to doubt them because we all know how messy and how vicious the game was at that point, particularly between Pakistan and Afghanistan. It seems that Murtaza Bhutto checked with the Afghan intelligence chief. Afghan intelligence organization then was called KHAD, K-H-A-D. KHAD chief at that point was none else than Mohammad Najibullah. It's the same Najibullah who later became president of Afghanistan and a strong man. And we know the tragic end that he met also. He was a friend of India. Again, he's somebody I knew well. And today, because I'm talking about Pakistan, you might even have to endure a little bit of propaganda that I do about myself. So see this picture of mine with Najibullah when he was president. Now, this hijack, in a way, ended successfully because to get the hostages back, Pakistanis had to release a lot of prisoners who Al-Zulfikar wanted freed, and they were freed in Tripoli, in Libya. So, once again, in the Middle East. So, that Middle East chap is very clear here. After Benazir Bhutto came to power in 1993, that's when Murtaza Bhutto came back to Pakistan. But he came back to Pakistan. His sister was the prime minister. He was not necessarily on the side of his sister because politics unites, politics also divides. So we've seen in the Gandhi family, Sanjay's side of the family and Rajiv's side of the family, they went their different ways. So in this case, Murtaza, when he came back, became a kind of rival and critic of the sisters because he did not like the brother-in-law. He did not like Asif Ali Zardari. So he set up his own party in the name of the late father, and also contested elections in Sindh Provincial Assembly and became a member of Provincial Assembly, which is the equivalent of the Indian MLA. But he was a critic of Benazir's and Zardari's, and he was a thorn in their side. And then all of a sudden something happened. There was a police encounter, or apparently or allegedly or purportedly a police encounter in Karachi, in which Murtaza Bhutto was killed along with six others. And six others included the leader of his party in the state called Ashiq Jatoi. Ashiq Jatoi, by the way, was a brother-in-law of Ghulam Mustafa Jatoi, who was also a great feudal from Sindh, who once became Prime Minister of Pakistan as well. So they were all killed in that so-called encounter. Nobody in Pakistan believed that it was a genuine encounter, nor does his daughter believe that. After that, there were inquiries. A month after that, President Farooq Lagari, at that point, dismissed Benazir's government. And one of the reasons he gave while dismissing her government was also the killing or the assassination of her brother. And investigations were then ordered. And Asif Ali Zardari was indicted for that assassination. That case went on and on and on. In 2008, he was acquitted. It obviously didn't hurt that by then his party had come to power and he'd become the president of Pakistan. Since these are two sort of parallel dynasties, Bhuttos and the Gandhis, many things have happened between them which have made history. So the Shimla Agreement was signed between Indira Gandhi and Zulfikar Ali Bhutto. Then in 1988 December, SAARC summit took place in Pakistan. And that's when Rajiv Gandhi went to Pakistan. He was the prime minister. Benazir had just become prime minister after Zia's death or Zia's assassination. And there I remember I had gone to cover that summit. And there I remember a line that Benazir spoke at their joint summit address, where she said, "Mr. Prime Minister, your mother, my father, from generation to generation, our families." And I thought at that point, I don't know if there's any future for our region, because if our elected leaders think that their relations run from generation to generation, then we are so deeply feudal that we may not have a future. After that, now we have Benazir's son, who is the foreign minister. So let us see what happens now. So it will be the third generation that India and Pakistan, when they engage diplomatically, or at the foreign minister's level, or at the highest level, there will be Bhutto involved in this side, but there will be no Gandhi involved from the Indian side. And because we are talking Bhuttos, and I told you, you will hear some propaganda, there will be a little bit of storytelling. So please bear with me. Now, 1993, when elections were taking place in Pakistan, and it was quite evident that Benazir Bhutto was coming to power. We met her, the photographer with me, and I, photographer was Prashant Panjiar, my friend. We met her in Karachi, and she said, "If you want to do an interview, come to Larkana, come to my hometown." And I said, but you know, we don't have the visa to come to Larkana. No Indian journalist get the visa to come that deep into Sindh or to come, go anywhere in Sindh except the city of Karachi, because Pakistani visas are city specific. He said, you come there. If there's a problem, we'll deal with it, which means I'll become prime minister. I'll deal with it. So obviously that if they lock you up in jail, maybe a week later, I will free you. We were also a bit younger than we are today and a little reckless. So we carried on to Larkana. So we were staying overnight at a hotel in Larkana. I think it was called Hotel Larkana. In Larkana, we flew from Karachi to Larkana. Larkana is the Mohenjo-daro airport. And Indians usually would not even get visas to visit Mohenjo-daro. And that airport only existed there so that tourists would come to Mohenjo-daro. So we walked around Mohenjo-daro. Then we went to Larkana, checked into the hotel. Next day was our interview at Ghadi Khuda Bakhsh, which is Benazir's hometown and where her father's buried and her brothers are buried. That's where the family mausoleum is. Anyway, we are staying in this hotel, and even before we could have our dinner, that early in the evening, we saw a lineup of Mitsubishi Pajeros outside the hotel on the narrow road in front of it. Now, Pajeros at that point, if Pajeros landed up in a small town in Pakistan, that too in Sindh, it was presumed that these belonged to intelligence agencies, police, security agencies. And we found that our hotel owner was getting very frightful. So I will not tell you a long story. I will just read you two paras from something I wrote in this collection. This is the centenary issue of the Taj magazine, Taj Hotel magazine. Fatima Zakaria, who was then the editor, she asked me if I could write about my experiences in fine hotels. I said, look, ma'am, I'm the wrong guy to ask for my experiences in fine hotels. You should ask Veer Sanghvi to do that. If you want me to write something, I will write about my experiences in bum hotels, right? So except I said, when I write this, I will keep the copyright on this. So this is the article that got written then. It's headlined Hotels in Hell. So I lived up to my promise of bum hotels. And the illustrations for the article were done by none else than Mario Miranda, the great Mario Miranda. And fortunately, I have the originals of these illustrations. And as you can see in this one, you have a journalist who looks a little bit like me, at least from the hairline, you can figure that out. And this is the kind of environment I might have been walking around in a little bit. And there's a glass of wine and a bottle of wine here. But you know, those who know me and read me also know that I am not particularly fond of wine or cheese. But he put a glass of wine here. Now, one of those experiences that we talk about is also what happened to us in this hotel in Larkana. So to keep this story brief, I will read you two paras from my written account. Begins, Benazir Bhutto seemed set to win. I met her in Karachi and she chided me for never having been to Larkana, the Bhutto family's feudal home in deep Sindh. Why don't we rectify that, Mr. Gupta? By the way, she always called me Mr. Gupta. Very formal. Why don't we rectify that, Mr. Gupta? Let me get you a permit to follow me there on the campaign and you will get your interview there. Of course, the permit never came. But we carried on nevertheless. Now, this was nice. Heady, actually, I wrote then. You go to Larkana, the family home of the Bhuttos. Except that the police and the spooks in troubled Sindh had never seen an Indian reporter there. That explained the Pajero headlights at the hotel entrance at night, to make sure that these Indians do not get up to anything funny at night. What are they doing in Larkana of all places? Spooks from three different Pakistani agencies sat on stools outside the room, outside the hotel room that Prashant and I were sharing. Three also sat next to the PBX console to monitor our phone calls. And that was an old-fashioned PBX console. It was just then that my wife called from Delhi. The police, she said, had caught the burglar who had cleaned out our house a couple of months earlier. I sensed trouble and tried to be vague. So she started describing the story in detail, the rank, the full names and all of all our friends in the police brass and the intelligence brass, including in the intelligence bureau. Right? I spoke with so-and-so, I spoke with so-and-so, everybody that she had been in touch with. And many of these were people that I had befriended in my days of covering trouble in Punjab and in the Northeast in India. But I bet for the Pakistani intelligence people, these were very interesting names. And so I bet that the Pakistani eavesdropper must have believed that their worst suspicions had been confirmed, that we were no journalists, we are really bad guys. Because if all our friends were cops and spooks in India, how could we be just reporters? And they might have thought that all this talk about burglary, etc., is some kind of a code, that actually we mean something else. So I was thinking at that point that maybe they also think that my Sony stereo that my children had identified from a picture of the stolen goods appearing in newspapers, the Pioneer at that point, that had to do with whatever spying game was going on. By the time the call ended, I had sweat on my forehead. More Pajeros were lining up in front of the hotel. The watchers at the door grew from 3 to 5 and also more senior and more menacing. The man who got even more disconcerted than me was the owner of the hotel. And he asked me, "Do you plan to stay here for longer?" So I said, "Yes, just another day." He said, "Look, you leave in the morning. It's not that I hate Indians, but you are too much trouble. Leave, I shall waive your bill." And now I will tell you a little highlight of the story. So who was the guy who burgled our home? It was the famous or infamous Bunty Chor, Bunty Thief, whose story you also saw Abhay Deol play out in Oye Lucky Lucky Oye. So I'm sorry I inflicted on you these two paras from this account, but if you are interested, soon enough we will put some of our material behind a paywall. So our subscribers will have exclusive access to my archive of all the work I have done, and a lot of this writing, including this article, will be there. So most importantly, do take a paid subscription to The Print.